Members, today, Wednesday, February 12th, and our time is 1:02 here on Wednesday afternoon. We're going to begin our health finance policy meeting. As a reminder to all those in attendance here, there will be no outbursts, signs, or applause from the people attending this. The audience is asked to remain seated and clear the aisles. And if you need some accommodation, our gold tie folks can help you with that, our sergeant at arms. So please coordinate anything with the sergeants. And so those are our rules today. Also, the first item of our business is approval of minutes. Will Representative Bierman, have you had a chance to look at the minutes, and would you like to approve them?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Lee Bierman moves to adopt the minutes. Thank you. And all of those in favor say aye.
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 All those against say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So today, members, we have two bills. We have House File 25 and House File 24. We will hear House 25 first. My goal, and I have had a discussion with Lee Bierman, our goal is to hear both the bills during this time. At the same time, I want our members to feel that they can debate. So we have reserved a room after caucus tonight at 7 if we need to do that. My intention would... What's that?
Sorry to bother you, Mr. Chair. I spoke too quickly. My name is not on the minutes.
Oh. It's you're not on the minutes. Okay.
Was here. How would you not know I wasn't here?
I know you were here. So what do we do? Send the motion or do it? Because we approved the minutes. Well, we do want you to be included, Representative Hewitt. You know what I'm saying?
That's, I appreciate that.
As an EMS colleague, I don't want you to feel like you have to dial 911. So we will have to, we are going to move to reconsider Bierman's motion. So would you go ahead and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make that motion provided everybody sees their name on the minutes who were attended. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other changes before we proceed? Okay, so all in favor of approving the minutes as changed, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Or all those against say nay. So thank you, members. So, okay, we're jumping into House File 25, House File 24. A couple things, like I was sharing initially. Our goal is to be able to hear both bills during this committee. At the same time, we want debate as needed. My goal for House File 25 is to take a vote on it around 150. That would be a goal. And then House File 24 around that 240-ish. And also, I want to make sure the testifiers, you're going to have 3 minutes each. We'll have a little grace, maybe 3.5 minutes, but not much more for that. So with that said, members, on our agenda today, what's that? Okay. That's right. We wouldn't, yeah. Members, on our agenda today is House File 25, House File 25 from Representative Zelistikard. But before we do that, I know, Lee Bierman, you wanted to share something before we heard the bill.
Thank you. I appreciate a moment, Mr. Chair, to address the committee. I just want to say that to the committee members and members of the public watching this hearing, the bills that you see passing through committees right now are the bills the GOP knows they don't have any bipartisan support for. These are hyperpartisan bills that might have 11 votes on this committee, but will not receive 68 votes on the floor. That said, I think they are a good representation of the contrasts between our caucuses, particularly whether we choose to support access to reproductive health care or choose to erode access and restrict abortion. On the author's amendment to pull funding for CPCs from the MDH base budget, it's pretty clear that the outpouring of support for the Family Planning Grant Program, including from many clinics in all of our districts, that helped make the decision to decide to against cutting that program. But however, moving the choice to pull money from MDH's budget, especially in light of the fact that we heard and saw and talked with MDH about the validity of the vital services the agency provides, cutting that budget and not specifying what you would cut from MDH is a misguided policy. So that being said, these issues, these are very contentious issues. We've all talked about them. It is hard to say all that needs to be said on these issues that we are about to address today in committee. But these bills will move forward today, and a deeper discussion will happen on the House floor, and we'll appreciate the debate as these bills move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Lead Bierman. Representative Zalesikard, would you like to move your bill to judicial?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Zalesikard, you have an A2 author amendment. Would you like to explain and move your amendment?
Yes, the A2 amendment, I would like to move the adoption of the amendment. And at this time, I would like Mr. Harney from Nonpartisan to walk through the detail of multiple pages and the reason for it. Thank you.
And Representative Zalesikard, move your mic a little closer for.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's on.
And go ahead, Mr. Harvey.
Chair Becker, members of the committee, the A2 amendment, while 13 pages, does two relatively simple things. On page 4, it deletes section 3 and inserts a section from session law in 2023, chapter 70. I'll point members to beginning on page 13. At the end, rather, of page 13 is an adjustment to the base of the health improvement budget activity at MDH from $197,644,000 to $193,644,000 in fiscal year 26, and a movement from $195,714,000 in fiscal year 27 to $191,714,000 in fiscal year 27. That's the explanation for the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Zalesikard moves the A2 author amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed signify by saying nay. Okay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Zalesikard, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, to the point made, there was a partisan bill that passed in 2023. I agree with that. It was historic funding was removed in the last session. And this bill, House File 25, is a supporting women bill. It allows grant program money for pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes. There was historic funding for the positive alternative grants ran prior to 2023. Minnesotans understand that from 2006 to 2023, this was a bipartisan grant program that ran through this body. And there was strong bipartisan support. This grant helped pregnant women, mothers, and children. And the need existed before 2023, and the need exists today. And what this bill is really about is about providing options to support women. This bill is a supporting women bill. My bill is budget neutral. It's amended. It's taking money that Minnesota Department of Health has grown, not 50%, but this last biennium was 90%. So this is not eliminating any other choices for women. This is giving them more options. The Supporting Women Bill is going to give them choice. If there's only one option, there's not choice. This bill is going to allow women to have the support to make the decisions they want. And I urge members, I look forward to the discussion today with the testifiers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, we're going to, turn to the list of testifiers. So each testifier will get 3 minutes. We have, when you come up, please introduce yourself. We have initially Amber Hornsby. Go ahead. Again, when you get up there, please, for the record, say your name. And we ask you to keep it to 3 minutes.
Yeah. My name is Amber Hornsby, and I'm here to testify in support of the HF25.
You can sit right here.
Go ahead, Ms. Hornsby.
Thank you, Chair Backer, and members. My name is Amber Hornsby, and I serve as the Executive Director and co-founder of Esther Homes, a maternity home in St. Paul. And today I am testifying in support of HF25. Today I am here to address a crucial yet often overlooked aspect of the pro-life and pro-choice debate, and that is the person who chooses to continue a pregnancy while facing homelessness, crisis, a lack of support, and an uncertain future. How do we as a state show up for them? I worked in the largest family shelter before starting this maternity home, and what I experienced during my time there was pregnant women who had preterm labors, NICU admissions, and even infant loss. We recognized that change was essential for these women. What if we could create a home environment for pregnant women, offering them support and accountability, where it was safe to take a deep breath and remove stressors that contribute to poor maternal and birth outcomes? Could that be the solution to helping women transition from crisis to stability and even have a two-generational impact? After a year of collaboration with organizations such as Avenues for Youth, where 8 of the 10 beds at the time were filled by pregnant youth, and pregnancy resource centers, it became abundantly clear that this kind of support is a crucial need in our community. Since November, we have had 24 applications submitted in need of a safe place to have their baby. This number does not include inquiries and all agencies calling to make referrals. There is an absolute need in our community for pregnant women in crisis. Esther Homes provides maternity housing, resources, and community so that the women can focus on creating a better and stable future for their family. Since opening our doors in July 2015, there have been 13 babies born with healthy maternal and newborn outcomes. Women are allowed to stay up to 24 months in the home with the average stay of 14 months. During that time, they set their own goals. They maintain program eligibility by doing one of the following: either working, doing some sort of education or school certificate program, or mental health support. We have 2 weekly accountable meetings with them. One is a one-on-one for goal setting and needed referrals, and the second is a community-based skill building shared around a provided meal. We focus on financial literacy during their time in the home. They open a bank account when they move in, and each month they set aside 30% of their total monthly income. This is their money, and it is used to purchase vehicles and assist with the cost of transitioning into their own home. This we know. A passion for and commitment to supporting pregnant women has a multi-generational impact. Caring for the well-being of women, mothers, babies, and children supports whole families. Pregnancy and birth is a vulnerable time, especially when housing is uncertain. And we see this impact firsthand with those we serve. 100% of the families served were housing unstable at point of move-in. To date, 100% of our alumni families have their own apartments and are housing stable. We remain connected to all of our alumni families to ensure there is still forward movement and stability in their lives years after they move out of the home. They are invited back as active members of our community to events, educational classes, retreats, and holidays. As we celebrate 10 years this year, Esther Homes continues to show up for the need to help pregnant women in crisis in the Twin Cities. Thank you.
Thank you. And next is a Devon People. And then on deck is Maggie Hagney. I hope I'm pronouncing those correct. So state your name and where you're from. And again, 3 minutes, please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Backer and members of, my name is Diavion. I am an alumni of Esther Homes. I'm testifying in support of HF25. I found Esther Holmes shortly after finding out I was pregnant and homeless. Esther Holmes has truly been life-changing experience for me. Having a support system stand alongside me during a challenging time in my life really motivated me to tune in with myself. They gave me the space to focus on my mental health within the home, whether it was going to Amber at any time to vent, complain, or just reason with my choices in life. The community engagement, the family-like support and love gave me hope to push forward in my life, not only for myself, but for my daughters as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Ms. Henge from Minnesota Catholic Conference. State your name, where you're from. And then on deck is a Ms. Rose from Guiding Star.
Hi, thank you, Chair Becker and members of the committee. My name is Maggie Henge. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference to share our support for House File 25. Creating a grant program to provide funding to pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes will benefit our whole community. These organizations provide supportive and at times life-saving services to women who find themselves in unexpected pregnancies or crisis situations. Pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes offer valuable resources to most counties and many tribal communities when they are looking to help women find places that can provide free and reliable assistance. They help mothers who are uninsured, those who need help finding housing, assistance with material needs, parenting education, and more. These organizations are not in the business of deceiving women. They're in the business of helping women get the support they need during a difficult time. Simply because a pregnancy is unexpected or an expectant mother finds herself in a crisis situation does not mean she needs or wants to have an abortion. Pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes offer options to women in these circumstances. They make it possible, if the woman chooses, to carry her baby to term without feeling alone. They accompany women through pregnancy and beyond. The state has an interest in ensuring that women who want to make the choice for life have the support they need to do so. Let's not limit options, but instead expand options and services offered by supporting these essential community organizations. Please move forward with creating a grant to help these crucial services. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Rose, and then on deck we have a testifier from Americans United for Life after Ms. Rose.
Good afternoon, Chair Becker and members of the committee. I am Lauren Rhodes, by the way, R-H-O-D-E-S. I'm Lauren Rhodes, and I'm here to share with you all how a pregnancy resource center saved my life personally. I just earned my master's degree in business administration, and I moved back home to Minnesota to build my future. I was relying on support from my mom as I transitioned from school to the working world. Then, within 2 months, my world collapsed. My mother, my support system, my rock, suddenly passed away. I was drowning in grief, handling her home, bills, and funeral, all while unknowingly pregnant. When I finally saw a doctor, I was told I wasn't pregnant, that my hormones were just reacting to my loss, and grief could do this. My pregnancy test even came back negative. Weeks later, I still felt like I may have been pregnant, but I didn't want to continue seeking medical care with my family doctors since they had brushed off my symptoms and pain before. Confused and struggling with housing options due to now being unable to keep up my mom's rent, I was looking for somewhere to turn. My God sister encouraged me to reach out to Guiding Star Rakota, you know, the place with the loud free pregnancy test sign on Robert Street. When I walked into Rakota Life Care Center, they didn't judge me. They hugged me. Since I no longer had a doctor that I was working with, Rakota was able to provide me with not only a free pregnancy test, but an ultrasound. And there, my suspicion was confirmed. I was pregnant. Most importantly, Rakota gave me a safe space to breathe and process. They gave me knowledge about all of my options without pressure and without deception. We did explore my options for abortion, but ultimately, being in my second trimester, I knew that abortion wasn't for me. I also wasn't sure I could be a mother, and I wasn't sure of a lot of other things. But what I was sure of is that because of this resource center, I wasn't alone. When my son arrived, I had nothing prepared. Keeping him was actually a last-minute decision made alone from an out-of-state emergency room delivery bed. At this point, I had not told anyone, aside from the women at Wakota, that I was pregnant. I even went to Chicago to deliver my baby. When I came home with my baby, Wakota stepped in with cribs, car seats, life coaching, and a network of mothers who lifted me up when I had nothing left. They helped me rebuild, and because of them, I stand before you today, not just as an educator, but as the mother of a kindergarten graduate and a national wrestling runner-up. And according to him, he's a future gold medalist. The elimination of the Positive Alternatives Grant devastated places like Wakota, centers that ethically serve women in crisis. We need a grant program that supports organizations just like that one, ones that uplift, educate, and empower before, during, and after birth. I urge you to fund a future where no woman has to navigate a parenting crisis alone. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So next on deck is Americans United for Life, and then we will jump to a Zoom from Mr. King and Director for Lakes Life Care Center. Miss King, sorry, Jill. Yes, my miss. Go ahead, say who you are, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Masolia.
Thank you.
I live in Blaine, Minnesota, and I'm a member of Americans United for Life. And what an awesome testimony that we just heard. I'm also here today to advocate for women and their babies who need support. In 2021, which was the last year that Minnesota reported abortion data, over 1,000 women stated that they made the difficult decision to abort their child due to economic reasons. Women facing challenges like you've just heard, they are often faced with emotional distress, financial hardship, and feelings of fear, abandonment, and hopelessness. This Supporting Women Act grant will provide funding opportunities to pregnancy centers and maternity homes designed to meet women and their children in their most intense times of need. These valuable resources provide women with emotional support, personal counseling, accurate health information and education, and practical material assistance like clothing, food, diapers, car seats, and much more. Women deserve access to programs that provide them with the support and care that they need during their pregnancy and after their pregnancy. So please support Minnesota women and pass the Supporting Women Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we turn to Miss Jill King with Lakes Life Care Center on Zoom.
Hi, thank you, Chair Becker and members of the committee. My name is Jill King, and I am the Executive Director of Lakes Life Care Center, a pregnancy center located in Forest Lake, Minnesota. Our center was a recipient of the Positive Alternatives Grant, a resource that made an immeasurable impact on the lives of the women and families we served. I'm here today in strong support of House File 25, the Supporting Women Act, because funding like this changes lives. It allows organizations like ours to empower women, strengthen families, and build brighter futures for the next generation. When we received the Positive Alternatives Grant, we were able to expand our services and hire additional staff. This funding allowed us to offer critical programs, including our car seat program, which ensured every baby born to one of our clients had a safe start in life. It also provided the foundation for our prenatal and parenting education programs, which equip mothers and fathers with the tools they need to become confident, capable parents. But when the grant was eliminated, these life-changing programs were put at risk. Pregnancy centers like ours are lifelines in our communities. We don't work in isolation. We collaborate with public health departments, medical clinics, social services, churches, schools, to provide comprehensive, compassionate care for women and families in need. Many of the pregnant women who walk through our doors are struggling with lack of support and facing financial hardship, uncertainty, and fear. That's where we step in. With the right support, we can fill critical gaps, offering ultrasounds, prenatal vitamins, education, and material support such as baby clothes and diapers to help women, to help those women make informed, confident choices for themselves and their babies. But we can't do this alone. Funding like this can do more than just expand programs. It can change the trajectory of lives. It can help women carry their pregnancies to term with dignity and support. It equips families with the tools to thrive, not just survive. It strengthens communities by building strong, stable families. I urge you to stand with women and stand with families by supporting the Supporting Women Act. Together, we can ensure that no woman feels alone, no baby goes without basic needs, and no family is left without hope. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Next is Deputy Commissioner Wendy Underwood from MDH. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I am Wendy Underwood, Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. Thank you for having me today. House File 25 significantly reduces funding for Minnesota's Sexual and Reproductive Health Services Program, which provides comprehensive reproductive and sexual health education and access to pre-pregnancy family planning services for Minnesotans who face barriers to such services, whether that be geographic, cultural, financial, or other barriers. The funding proposed for reduction goes to communities across the state to provide education, counseling, screening, testing of sexually transmitted infections, and referrals for medical, financial, mental health, and other services a recipient may need. Without this funding, local public health offices and community clinics across the state would have to close programs or raise local dollars to continue these critical programs. Other risks to reducing this funding includes higher rates of unintended pregnancies, a reversal of the progress we are making towards lower teen birth rates in Minnesota. It potentially leads to an increase in infections and more. By reducing this funding, the bill increases disparities for teens and young adults, low-income families, tribes, and other Minnesotans who rely on these services. Moreover, this bill allocates funding towards maternity homes and pregnancy centers that often do not provide evidence-based services. Some centers do not offer fully comprehensive health information to women in accord with the national standards of care by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. These centers not only fail to adhere to these standards of care, but they may also mislead women by providing medically inaccurate information about health risks associated with abortion care to dissuade clients from seeking this option. This violates healthcare and legal standards of informed consent. Although some may have licensed medical providers, the majority do not. Pregnancy centers traditionally do not provide prenatal care or prenatal healthcare referrals. Pregnancy centers are not regulated under Minnesota law. Minnesota is making great strides to support individuals before, during, and after childbirth through the Sexual and Reproductive Health Services Program, as well as programs like WIC, Family Home Visiting, Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Families, and more. Minnesota supports more than 100,000 pregnant people, children, and infants through essential services like WIC nutritional services, breastfeeding support, provides access to free car seats and portable cribs. The Family Home Visiting Program offers intense in-home support and resources for pregnant and parenting women and families. And the Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Families program funds initiatives that aim to improve infant health outcomes by preventing sleep-related infant death, preterm birth, and birth defects. The program also provides housing support, transportation assistance, food resources, referrals to community resources, and parenting education to prevent infant mortality. Our current programs are providing comprehensive and safe resources. Thank you for this opportunity to share our concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Underwood. Just a note on that, your concerns with the reduction of the SRH grants was changed with the author's amendment. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that just came recently, so I know there's more than one thing that's going on in your life. So, but I just want to let you know that your concerns with the reduction of those was muted with the author's two amendment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, you're welcome. Now, we turn to who else would like to testify from the public? State your name and where you're from and 3 minutes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Backer, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Meyer, and I serve as the Executive Director of Options for Women East. We are a nonprofit medical pregnancy clinic on the east side of St. Paul. I'm testifying in support of House File 25. 2 years ago, I was here testifying. Our state funding was revoked, forcing us to reduce staff and services, changes that directly impacted the women and the families we serve. Many of our patients are facing unplanned pregnancies in difficult circumstances. They come to us seeking medical care, resources, and compassionate support to make informed choices. At Options for Women East, we're a little different. We provide full prenatal care from pregnancy testing to delivery and postpartum with the optional 3 years of family follow-up. Our volunteer doctors, who yes, are licensed, work alongside our licensed medical paid staff. We meet all the patient's needs, including OB visits, testing and treatments, medications, ultrasounds, mental health support, nutrition counseling, lactation services, education, materials, supplies. This is all at no cost to the families. These are people coming in who are uninsured and don't know where to go, who lack the services and do not get prenatal care. And yes, we follow all the ACOG guidelines. One of our patients, T, shared her experience with our prenatal program. My experience with Options has been very meaningful. I went through a lot with my other pregnancy and it was very tough. Not much help. I didn't receive prenatal care and my life was harder. Since I've been coming here to Options, my family and I have gotten an abundant amount of help, love, and compassion. I thank every member of this team for having the amount of love and help for my family and I. Thank you, Options East, for everything. Without this critical funding, we have struggled to provide essential services to so many women like T. Again, like the maternity home, we have a waiting list. The need for these services have not decreased, but our ability to meet the need has. I urge you to reinstate the funding to pregnancy clinics in Minnesota. The funds allow us to continue serving vulnerable women and families, ensuring they receive the care and support they need during a crucial time in their lives. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public like to testify? Now we have volume here. It's working. Please, for the record, state your name and 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Backer and members. My name is Becky Williams, and I work as a bilingual certified life coach at Pregnancy Choices in Apple Valley, located in Dakota County. I'm testifying in support of House File 25. In my work as a certified life coach, this past year, I met a client who I'll call Tanya. Tanya was referred to us through a counselor at a community college where she's a nursing student. She found herself pregnant for the first time in her late 30s. She ended a 10-year abusive relationship in protection of her unborn child. And when she came to us for resourcing, she was overwhelmed by her situation. Tanya knew she had always wanted to be a mom, but she knew that now she would really need support to be one. She found herself unhoused with no support from the father. She had minimal connection with her own family, but she knew she needed that emotional and material help. I invited Tanya to participate in our Baby and Me coaching program, 8 coaching sessions throughout pregnancy, which we offered to both women and men. I had the opportunity to coach Tanya through the program and saw her grow in confidence, self-awareness, setting personal goals, and watching herself achieve them. Because of the positive alternative grant, Tanya received a full-size crib and mattress that will convert to a toddler bed for her daughter. She continues in our life coaching program, Baby and Me 2, every month so she can collect diapers, wipes, and baby clothes. Tanya told me that her baby had been clothed for the first 9 months of her life by clothing that she had earned through our program. She told me several times that our programs at Pregnancy Choices filled the gap for her when she needed it most. The funding from the PA grant allows us to step into this gap, helping to move families from surviving to thriving. Tanya is just one of the 697 clients that we served last year, both women and men, at no cost. Many clients don't have the money for a car seat or crib. This funding is about caring for families who need practical, tangible support. We can all agree that we want our families to thrive so children like Tanya's little girl can grow up in a safe and stable environment. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public that would like to testify? Please state your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, thank you for being here. Thank you for working for us. I am Joyce Nevins. I have been a volunteer most of my life. I've raised a family here in town. My husband is a physician here in town. I am not prepared to speak exactly, but I want to tell you that the people you have heard in favor of House Bill 25 have told every word they've said is the truth. They've left out some things I'm going to tell you. We started Philomena House in the year 2000 with a small house that provided home for one woman who was in need of home. She was homeless. They get to stay there for a year. So we decided we needed more room, and I was the first director of the house with 6 bedrooms called Philomena House, a vintage home started by a vintage lady on the east side. What I saw there was a wonderful collaboration of volunteers, mostly professional. There were nurses, workers from the city that were retired. We had a physician. We had a pediatrician on the staff. Everything was watched very carefully. We went by the pregnancy book of the Minnesota gave us from the Minnesota Department of Health. We made sure the girls knew everything in there. We had a financial program. I should say we have it because it's still in existence. We had we sent them to options for parenting. These clinics were absolutely, we were collaborating with the clinics. We were collaborating with state health nurses. We're in our home. 4 other homes started because from what we gave them to help them in Duluth and Hibbing, in Waconia, they were all with our funds, without state money. We started with $20,000 that we raised from volunteers that were interested in really giving women a choice. And this positive alternatives was voted on by everybody so that women had a choice. You were paying for Planned Parenthood. When the public saw that, they said, well, we have to plan for life. We have to look at the life side of this. As a nurse, I've seen a baby aborted. It's a baby. It's a really baby. It was a little girl. It was aborted. We called it abortion in those days, but that was before it was legal. I want to tell you that the collaboration you're getting from the volunteer corps, women, nurses, teachers, social workers that ordinarily would never know or meet a homeless woman. I wasn't there. I didn't know about this until I was asked to do the director. It was a learning experience. I wrote a book. It's not published yet, but it's a great learning experience. It's a great collaboration with the public, and it saves money. I was many times thinking about the money that we were saving by being there, helping these women. They went to the Jeremiah program from us. We were directly affiliated with many other programs. I went to court with the girls. I paid their fees. Who would do that? I mean, these girls were on a different place now. They wanted to go a different path. They wanted to have a baby, and they wanted to support the baby. So we helped them go to school. We helped them find jobs. We had a life coach. To call these maternity homes unprofessional is just ridiculous. So I think I'll end there, unless anybody has any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public like to testify? Okay. Members, I will then open up to questions and discussion. Okay. Representative Liebling, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Zalesnikov, I think you started out by saying that this was that your bill was you didn't say it exactly like this, but your bill is replacing something that was removed in the last couple of years. And so I want to ask you, this piece about maternity homes, I don't recall ever seeing that funded. Is this new, or is this something that was funded as part of Positive Alternative?
Representative Zalesnikov.
Thank you, Representative Liebling, and that's a great question. Members, I listened to the women and listen to the options that they want. And so the money is the same. There was $4 million that was allocated through the Positive Alternatives grants. And so this bill directs $3 million to the pregnancy resource centers instead of $4 million, same amount of money, and also adds a layer for the housing component, which is extremely important, as you've heard by the evidence of real people here today that have been affected by having housing in maternity homes. And so I address that by allocating $1 million of that $4 million to the maternity homes. Thank you for the question.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so it's pretty clear this is new. This isn't something that was there before. And so, you know, I think when I listen to the testifiers and when I listen to you, Representative Zalesnikov, there's actually a lot here that could be bipartisan. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all want women who are pregnant to have and want the pregnancy to have a healthy pregnancy. And we all recognize, as Assistant Commissioner Underwood was talking about, all the things we do in the state to support women and children. We do a lot to support pregnant women, and we can always be doing more. So I don't actually, you know, the kind of the underlying idea in the bill to provide some services even beyond what we already do, I don't think any of us would say that that's not fundamentally an okay idea. But the real problem here is in the execution. This could be a bipartisan bill if it was rewritten in significant ways. And one of the really significant ways it needs to be rewritten is there needs to be oversight. So I guess I would ask you, even though we've heard some testimony from some people who say that they don't deceive women and they don't, you know, that they have medical licensed services, clearly, there's nothing in law, or is there, Representative Zalesnikov? I'm sorry, I can't really see you. These rooms are terrible, aren't they? There's nothing in law and nothing in your bill that puts any real restrictions around what they what they have to be offering to make sure that the services are medically appropriate, to make sure that women aren't deceived about what is being offered, to make sure that the facility, if these are the so-called crisis pregnancy centers, that they are clear about what they're doing, because we know that a lot of them try to look like an abortion center and actually move in close to an abortion center in an attempt to deceive women about what they are, so that they can walk in there when they really intended to go get an abortion. So, you know, I think there's actually some common, there's room for some common ground here, but I don't see the bill getting anywhere near that common ground as it's currently written. So I'll stop there. I think some of my other colleagues will have some more comments.
Representative Zalesikar, any
thank you, Representative Liebling, on the comments. I believe that options allow women to make choice. And women having options available doesn't change the fact that a woman's going to choose a decision that's best for them. And we have other aspects of MDH that are not regulated too. And we operate in an honor system in that capacity. So I think that what this is pretty clear. It worked for 17 years. For 17 years, pregnancy resource centers, through the positive alternative grants, had a bipartisan. It was never partisan until 2023. I'm trying to help the homeless and the housing issue with a layer of housing. That is the only change. There's nothing changing here except allowing to have safe housing for women, which is what women want when you listen to them. It's taking the same allocation. And we, Minnesota women deserve to have those options and a safe place to have their baby and to have a place to live. But I appreciate that, and that's the backdrop of it. It's giving women the options they need for the support they need. They're going to be able to make the choice they want to make. Thank you.
Representative Lead Bierman.
Thank you, Chair Becker. And just following up on Chair Liebling's point about this bill being so much different than what was there before, I would just point out as well, the previous bill that we had crafted had two fundamental changes to receive the funding. One was that information provided at a pregnancy center needed to be medically accurate information. Number two, you must provide referrals for abortion care when requested. Those were the two significant items that were in the previous bill. In this version of the bill, Representative Zalesnikar, 2.16 says there's not use of any grant funds to 2.21, an organization is not eligible for a grant under this section if the organization provides abortions, promotes abortions, or directly refers women to an abortion provider. So my question is, this is taking a step beyond where we were before, and just wanted to highlight that for members that we can work on this proposal, but I think that there's fundamental barriers that are not being addressed. Medically accurate information and providing referrals when abortion is requested are pretty fundamental if you're going to operate a institution or an entity that is trying to advise women of all of their choices. No real question there. I just wanted to add on to what Representative Liebling said, but would be willing to hear any response from Representative Zalesnikar on the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. I think the A2 amendment and clarifies that the services and how this is going to work. And so this really is just bringing back the very services that were available to women prior to 2023. Same amount of funding. It just allows it to be have an important layer for the home setting, for the maternity homes, to offer that supportive structure. $4 million is still the total amount. And $3 million, that's the part that's changed. The $3 million of funding to the pregnancy resource centers and $1 million to the maternity homes.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am new to this committee, but there were a few mentions of things by testifiers mostly that were a little disturbing for me to hear. I guess I have a couple of questions. One is about rural health care and the crisis pregnancy centers. What impact the shift of these $4 million, what impact that has had? Have any of those centers closed that you're aware of, representatives?
Go ahead, Representative Zalesikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. I don't know. I've toured many of them. I don't know the data. I'd have to get that, request that, or try to find that data of how many have closed. What I've heard is the amount of people that have, the waiting lists are long to be served in maternity homes. But as far as closures, I don't have data on what those numbers could look like for the 87 counties.
Follow-up, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd be very interested in that information because we know rural health care is a big issue. So I guess my follow-up is, where are the fundings for these nonprofits coming from, if not from the state? And then I have a procedure question if this bill is going to be going to the Housing Committee as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zalesikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. For most of these are fundraising. They're getting donations to run their programs throughout the state without the state allocation.
And to Representative Purcell to ask a question, this bill will go to judicial after this stop. Where it goes from there, that we're sending it to judicial. That's what I know right now. Okay. Representative Leland.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't want to, you know, have too much of a second bite here, but Representative Zalesikar, you just said that we had stopped funding the maternity homes. We have never funded maternity homes. I just want to clarify that. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea. Maybe it's a good idea if they're properly established and properly regulated, but we have never funded them. So don't, you can't talk about how we took money away from them. They've never been funded. As far as I know, that is not something that we defunded. It was never funded.
Representative Zanitkar, excuse me.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. In fact, what I said is $4 million was allocated for 17 years in a bipartisan way from the House and the Senate, and that ended in 2023. $4 million was stripped from the Positive Alternatives Grant that had a long-standing history of bipartisan support before 2023. That's what I said. And what I said is that I took the $4 million, the same amount of money, and allocated $3 million back to the Positive Alternatives Grant and $1 million for maternity homes, two programs that could run under grant funding. And so that is the position of this bill, House File 25, is supporting women with true options and more than one option. And that has existed for 17 years. And yes, it looks a little different, but I believe this bill serves and supports women. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be kind of clear about something in the language that we have. You know, what I heard Representative Zalesikar is you saying that women should have choices and that they should be able to make those choices. But the language of the bill very clearly restricts their ability to have those choices and restricts their ability to have a referral if they so desire. And so I'm struggling on how to square those two things because it doesn't actually do that. And I have no issue with people making the choice to keep a child. In fact, that's fantastic if they do. I think I am thankful that my mother made that choice when she was stressed at 19 and not sure what she was going to do. I'm thankful that she had a loving and supportive family that was willing to do everything necessary to care for her and for me and give us what we needed. But I also know that's not the reality for every family. It's certainly not the reality for every individual. I really appreciate the part of this bill that talks about maternity homes, and which were not previously covered. But if they are following the law, if they are using medically accurate information, if they are providing viable alternatives, if they are acting as any other resource that provides medical guidance, where when you ask for a referral on something, they give you the referral. They don't tell you, no, we can't make that referral to you. I don't know of any medical clinic that says to you, if you request it, that you can't actually be referred. And maybe they decide not to, when they have that referral appointment, they decide not to go down that road. And that's fine. But you can't deny someone something that gives you a choice and then in the same breath tell us that it's about choice. I find that really incongruent and frustrating to me, because there are parts of this bill and parts of the care that we're delivering here that everyone in this room would agree to. And the fact that we're deliberately putting in provisions that are essentially a poison pill that would prevent everyone in this body from supporting them, I find really frustrating. Because there is no one in this room who doesn't believe we want to do every single thing to protect women and children. Mm-hmm. There is not one. There is not one person in this room who doesn't believe that we should spend more money taking care of our most vulnerable and our youngest children, our families. We spend lots of money. In fact, in the last couple of years, if anyone's been paying attention, we have put remarkable amounts of money into things like postpartum care, making sure that women continue to have health insurance for 12 months postpartum, for exactly some of the reasons we're talking about here. Those things have been done, and they're available, right? So it's not as if there is no other alternative here. I just want to be clear on that. And I also want to be clear that we've made huge strides in trying to take care of women and children. We've made sure that forms of contraception are covered under health insurance. We've made sure that they're available immediately after delivery, which they weren't for a very long time. And I know that because that was my bill. And I just, I'm really struggling with this bill because there's so much good in this bill, but there's poison pills in here that clearly don't meet the mark on the referrals. And then on top of all of that, as a technologist, I care greatly about data privacy and how those things are used. And I would ask the chair not to have the members be making comments during our conversation. But that said, I think that, you know, we think about how people are accessing this data. Who has access to this data? How is it being used? Is there private data being shared with other sources or being secured? Many of these clinics are not subject to HIPAA regulation. And there is nothing that is making that effort. And I did see that there were some minor attempts at this, but the reality is we're not talking about how we're protecting the data and the privacy of the women using these services. And there should not be a trade-off that I get care that I need, but I don't get the privacy that I deserve. And I think that is a piece that is missing. And I think you might actually find some people willing to support funding for these things if we actually meet certain requirements and make sure it really is a choice, that they are getting referral to services if they want them, that there isn't the ability to lie or deceive someone. We have evidence that suggests that as much as 68% of these organizations have at some point deceived patients or have outright lied. And I can tell you, as someone who has a constituent of mine who I spoke to just yesterday about this, she worked at a crisis pregnancy center for over a year. And she said to me, I did it because I was so passionate about wanting to take care of women, and I wanted them to get access to the services that they needed to have healthy babies, to be healthy moms. But she said some of the things our directors told us to do and some of the things we were asked to do in that role were disgusting. She said, as a deeply spiritual woman,
I really struggled with how to address those issues and those incongruencies. She eventually left serving at the pregnancy center because she just couldn't do it in good conscience anymore. And I find that the protections that we're looking for to make sure that we're really meeting the best interests of moms and babies are not necessarily in this bill. I do think they could be there, and I do think we could really look at, have a real serious conversation about how to get funding to these organizations if they need it, if those elements are available. And I will just leave it there.
Okay. In matter of time, Representative Zalistikar would like to renew her motion that her bill would be recommended to pass as amended and referred to judicial. So with that, Representative Zalistikar moves that House File 25 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to judicial.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
May I just ask also about the referral of the bill to housing? Would that go, is that on the list as well?
As, right now what I know is Lee Bierman that it's going to go to judicial, and if it needs to make other stops, it would go to those locations.
Very good.
Okay. So with that said, okay. Representative Zalistikar, final words.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call requested. So, and roll call granted, folks. So with that, Mrs. Scobie will take the roll.
Chair Backer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nadeau.
Aye.
Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Carroll?
No.
Representative DePell?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Franson?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
No.
Representative Huat?
No.
Representative Knutson?
Aye.
Representative Liebling?
No.
Representative Mahmoud?
No.
Representative Perryman?
Aye.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Rapinski?
Aye.
Representative Ryer?
No.
Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Representative Van Binsbergen?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
Okay, the motion prevails. Thank you. Members, thank you for your patience. So with roll call with 11-4 and 10-nay, the motion prevails, and House File 25 is recommended to pass as amended, and it's heading to judicial. Thank you, members, and thank you, Representative Zalistikar. Thank you. Now, next on our agenda today is House File 24 from Representative Knutson, and we'll wait for her to get to the table. Okay, Representative Knutson, would you like to move your bill and be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register?
I would. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Knutson, please introduce your bill and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is House File 24. This is a very simple bill, two sentences long. What this bill does is it reinstates protections for babies that survive abortion, ensuring that they receive medically necessary care to preserve the life and health of that baby. That's it.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Knutson. Now we turn to testifiers. We would ask that you keep it to 3 minutes. And the first one on deck is Mrs. Carlson. And then after that is Chris from American United for Life. State your name and your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Renee Carlson. I serve as general counsel for True North Legal, which is a legal initiative of the Minnesota Family Council. House File 24 restores life-saving measures for infants who are victims of failed abortions, ensuring that life, the most basic fundamental human right, is afforded to all Minnesotans regardless of age. Under what is now current law, a doctor must simply provide care for the infant, whereas care is undefined, lacking clear legislative intent. As lawmakers, you understand words matter. And Chairman Backers, you made clear in 2023, this statute, as is currently drafted, presents legal confusion and ethical concerns for EMTs, doctors, nurses, and other medical personnel. House File 24 provides necessary legal clarity regarding the standard of care required for treating the victim of a failed abortion. Some members of this committee, even Governor Walz, have essentially argued that Born Alive protections are bills in search of a problem. That is unfounded, as the Minnesota Department of Health's own records tells us that infants in this state have been born alive after failed abortions. I draw your attention right here, members, to the packet that you have and turn to the report regarding the 2017 reports, again, that are provided in your packets. Here, the Minnesota Department of Health reported 3 infants born alive after an unsuccessful attempt to end their life. Even more troubling, the report indicates, quote, in one instance, no specific steps taken to preserve life were reported, and the infant did not survive. This language leaves us to infer that these child's lives do not matter. How so? In Minnesota, legal penalties for animal cruelty range from a misdemeanor up to a felony, while there is no criminal penalty for leaving an infant abortion survivor to die on a cold metal table. Thus, Minnesota cattle and reptiles have more legal protections than these vulnerable children. Saying this rarely happens is also unreasonable, as one person's rights do not depend on how many other people's rights have been violated. Leaving one infant to die is one too many. As legislators, you have both a responsibility and a duty to craft laws that protect Minnesotans' most basic fundamental rights. House File 24 is a step in the right direction. Thank you, members.
Thank you. After Chris at Americans United for Life, we have Kathy, Director of MCC. So you're up a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, my name is Chris Masolia from Blaine, Minnesota, and I'm with Americans United for Life. And I'm here today to advocate for infants who are born alive after a failed abortion attempt. As has been stated, House File 24 is a very simple amendment. It just clarifies that babies who enter the world alive, vulnerable, and in need of protection receive life-saving medical care. Most Minnesotans would be horrified to imagine a baby, an infant, surviving an abortion attempt, being left to die without any life-saving medical care. Who is more vulnerable? Who is more needing of protection than a helpless infant having just survived an abortion attempt? We know that this happens in this state, as has already been mentioned by Minnesota's own data. Minnesotans are not extremists. Minnesotans do not want to promote infanticide. Minnesota should pass House File 24 to ensure that these infants receive life-saving medical treatment that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Kathy next, and then we'll have two Zoom presentations after this one. Testimony, I should say. Go ahead, state your name and for the record, and 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Chair and members. Kathy Blazer, Co-Executive Director of Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. This bill would restore the requirement for medically appropriate life and health-preserving treatment for babies who survive an attempted abortion. This common sense legislation has been in Minnesota statute since 1976, when it first passed the House on a vote of 121-10 in a chamber comprised of 103 DFL and 31 GOP members. It was strengthened in 2015, passing the House on a vote of 99-31 and signed into law by Governor Mark Dayton. It continues to receive widespread public support despite the rhetoric used in 2023 to dismantle it. When a baby survives an abortion attempt, there are quite clearly two patients in the room, two separate bodies, two separate individuals, two separate human beings. A moment before an abortion survivor is born, everyone in that room is working to ensure her death. There is no one advocating for that baby. The changes made in 2023 sweep these survivors under the proverbial rug. No one need treat. No one need report. No one need say a word. Nothing to see here. Between 2015 and 2022, when a reporting of these babies was required in Minnesota's annual abortion report, 24 babies survived the abortion attempt. In 6 of these 8 years, 3 to 5 born alive abortion survivors were reported each year. Recent polling of Minnesota's registered voters shows that even among those ambivalent on abortion, 88% support providing care to newborn survivors of attempted abortions. Minnesotans want these protections returned, and they want to know how their legislators are voting on this. House File 24 is a common sense bill, widely supported across all Minnesota demographics. People are horrified when they hear that babies are not receiving this treatment. Please restore these protections for babies who survive attempted abortions. And I would encourage you to look at our written testimony submitted for more detailed information. Thank you.
Thank you. We turn to Zoom. We have two testifiers on Zoom, and we'll have help.
Good afternoon, committee members, chairs. Thank you for having me. My name is Sarah Zagorski. I live in and am from New Orleans, Louisiana. I survived an induction abortion in 1990. After my birth mother sought the services of Gentilly Medical Center for Women, an induction-style abortion is a procedure that ends the life of the baby prematurely by starting labor and delivery. The abortion physician there at Gentilly Medical in New Orleans was a physician named Dr. Akpalabi, and he was known in that community for allegedly helping impoverished women and minority women with their pregnancies. My birth mother was Hispanic, and at the time of my conception, already had 7 children, whom had been in and out of Louisiana's very populated foster care system. My mother was referred to the abortion physician because his costs were low, and he was known to be a cheap physician. Unknown to her, though, Dr. Akpalabi was under review by Louisiana's medical board for performing a botched abortion just a year prior in 1989. In my procedure, he delivered me at just 26 and a half weeks, breech, and upon delivery, I was not breathing.
Dr. Hallaby then advised my mother to leave me to die on the table. He proceeded to tell her that I would be a mental vegetable incapable of having a normal life. Thankfully, in just a matter of seconds, my mother resisted his coercion and fought for my life. She even informed Dr. Palavi that if he didn't act immediately, she would sue him, a warning that I believe today compelled him to listen, given his legal troubles in Louisiana. I was transferred to Louisiana's Children's Hospital, where I was placed in their trauma birth ward, and I did recover and go on to have a wonderful life. When I look back today at my mother's bravery, I'm overwhelmed with thankfulness at her courage, but also with indignation that she was put in this coercive position in the first place by the physician overseeing or supposedly overseeing her quote unquote care. My mother was a woman at the epicenter of disadvantage with multiple setbacks in her life, and it should have been the prerogative of the medical professional to give her the care, give me the care that I need and the care that she needed then. Yet this is certainly not what occurred. Dr. Akpalabi was sure a woman like her would never speak up, would never fight for my life. To be clear, House File 24 before you today would require that that responsibility is upon that physician, and it would save babies like me from infanticide. And that is exactly what we're talking about. A baby on the table left to die, that is infanticide. So I encourage you to please pass this important legislation for everyone in Minnesota, for the protection of babies like me and for their mothers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next on Zoom is Dr. Clay. Dr. Clay is next. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mikaela Clay. I only have 3 minutes to speak, but in this amount of time, my life can be ended as if it was almost ended at an abortion clinic like the one that I was born at in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1979. I was born during an attempted vacuum aspiration that failed, and I was born alive. I was estimated to be born at the end of my second trimester, early third trimester, based on my lack of development as a newborn. I will never know the day that I was born or the time. I was born, unfortunately, without a day of birth or any identifying information, only known as Sissy Doe for the first 6 years of my life. Surrounding my birth or gender reveals, there were no parties. My birth mother going to an abortion clinic and attempting to end my life and me surviving being born alive, then her abandoning myself and my 2-year-old brother are the only birth story that I will ever know. My certificate of live birth has no information on it other than my adopted name, the name of my parents who adopted me, and my city, county, and state of birth, St. Paul, Minnesota, Ramsey County. That was stamped 6 years after I was born. And to finally signify that I was a legal human being in the state of Illinois where I was adopted. I've been told that my opinion doesn't matter, that I'm not supposed to be here, so I have no say, but I am here. I'm an educated mother of two and sister and friend to many. Babies are born alive during failed abortions in Minnesota, like I was, and all over the world. How can any human being look into the face of another and tell them that baby should perish because someone didn't want them here? My life matters. The lives of those who haven't been born yet matter. Babies who are born alive during failed abortions matter just as much as you. Thank you.
Thank you for that testifying testimony. We have next, Dr. Stevens is next. Please state your name for the record and 3 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and everyone who has chosen to join us this afternoon. My name is Dr. Erin Stevens. I'm an OBGYN physician and the legislative chair for the Minnesota section of the American College of OBGYNs, otherwise known as ACOG. I'm here to speak on behalf of ACOG in opposition to House File 24. Bills like this are often well-intentioned, but come from unfortunate misinformation. What this bill suggests to the general public, why the general public would be horrified, what these testifiers otherwise want you to believe, is that a medical situation exists frequently that does not actually occur. That there are nefarious doctors out there aborting healthy term pregnancies, and that throughout that procedure, something goes wrong. It's a botched abortion. And we end up with a healthy, happy baby that sits on the table and dies without anyone doing anything. That does not happen. I want you to understand the medical situations that bills like this and having conversations like this and misleading the public would actually impact. We have a healthy pregnancy proceeding smoothly. The family is excited. They're joyful. They're making a baby registry. They're planning names. They're planning the decorations of the nursery. And then suddenly, everything is changed by a devastating diagnosis. This could be a largely fatal fetal genetic condition like trisomy 18. This could be a severe problem with organ development that is not compatible with life, insufficient brain tissue, absence of kidneys, a severe heart abnormality. This could be a complication in the pregnancy that is life-threatening to the pregnant person, like severe preeclampsia at the very edges of viability. These are incredibly difficult diagnoses to have to share with patients and for patients to have to receive and understand and process. We as a medical clinical team provide all that medical clinical information and all the implications of any of the options they choose to proceed with. Patients have plenty of time to ask questions and to thoughtfully process how any of their decisions might impact them physically, mentally, and emotionally for the rest of their lives. These are not easy decisions to make. In the course of this decision making, no one is forced to do anything. No one is mandated to do anything. We provide compassionate care and support people in the decisions they decide to make that are best for them. One of those decisions may include deciding to proceed with termination through delivery, through an induction of labor or a C-section. And often the reason that the patient chooses this, knowing that their baby might be alive for a short period of time, but not a significant amount of time, is because they want to be able to hold that live baby for whatever precious time they might have. And when we create laws like this and make medical decisions in rooms like this, we deprive people of the chance to have that opportunity to experience those few breaths or those few heartbeats, because instead fruitless medical interventions are being performed. I know that the testifiers here have experienced really rare circumstances that they lived through these attempted abortions and taking their life. In 1990, a 22-weeker surviving would have been unheard of, so that is amazing that that happened. But to require all 22-weekers to be resuscitated even now doesn't make medical sense, whether it's an abortion or not, preterm labor. We are depriving people of chances to make decisions that make the most sense to them. We have to trust pregnant people to make the decisions that are best for their lives, and we have to trust medical professionals to use our training and our skills and all of our knowledge that we've spent years and years obtaining to be able to provide the best care for patients. We cannot sit here in rooms like this and legislate and interfere in the doctor-patient relationship in ways that limit that bodily autonomy and decision-making capacity. Please join me in opposition of House File 24.
Thank you. Now, would anyone else from the public like to testify? Okay. And what we're going to do now, just with a matter of time, we're going to limit this to a minute and a half. Minute and a half, please.
I'll work to be very brief. Hello, my name is Bethany Winkles. I'm here as a private citizen. I'm actually on family leave with my new child. I keep up to date on bills like this because I could have been directly impacted. As someone who has heard words and been given diagnoses like incompatible with life, won't survive, could be dead before you come back for your next appointment, and had to walk through the challenges of what that means, to be told by legislators that the idea that families like mine, women like me, pregnant people like me, don't know what it means to induce an abortion when it means that the child could be held, could be sat with, will die, and that could be taken away by the stroke of your pen is horrific. You need to not only listen to doctors, but you need to listen to patients. I don't hear any of the people that were brought up in the reports from the 3 to 5 examples of this here today in this room. I would like to know what their stories are. My assumption is, because I know people like that, I know people in Minnesota in my support groups like that, that they held their baby. That they watched their baby that was going to die either inside of them or eventually they held them while they passed. And to take that away from them, to force resuscitation, to force intervention, to force it based on this law, which is what ACOG is saying, the doctors are saying, the patients are saying what happened, is horrifying. So I got out of my newborn bubble and I drove here because on a regular day when I go to work, I know what it's like to advocate at the Capitol. And I know how hard it is for regular people to show up. And I know how traumatizing it is for people who've gone through what I've gone through to share their story. So I decided that today this was one thing I could do. So I urge you deeply to vote no on this. And I would ask that someone call for a roll call so I know who has stood with people like me and I know who thinks they know better.
Thank you for your testimony. Any others from the public that would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Thank you for those who showed up and shared their story. And now, members, I open it up for questions and discussion. Okay, we have Representative Hemmingson Yeager. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the time, and thank you, everybody who is testifying. This can be a very deeply emotional topic. I look at this bill, and it's a simple bill, and I look at it as a geneticist. I've gotten training, master's in genetics, so it's too simple to cover the complexity of what happens in the development of a baby, the development of a fetus. And Dr. Stevens, in her testimony today, talked about trisomy 18. And this was the first congenital disorder that came to mind for me when I think about what can happen. There is no treatment. There is no cure for trisomy 18. And to just, you know, to focus only on preserving the life, we are disregarding palliative care. And we are disregarding what is happening in that moment with the parents and the child. So we need to be cognizant that if we just have these simple bills, there's so much more happening. And we need to make sure that we have medical professionals with up-to-date information talking with their patients in a private manner so that they can make the best decision for themselves. And I'll leave my comments there.
Okay, thank you. Any comment there, Representative?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I didn't really hear a question in there, just comments. Thank you for your comments. I do have just one thing to say. We're not talking about making that decision. It's the decision's been made, that baby's been born, that baby is alive, that baby has rights, that baby should be protected. And nobody should be able to deny that baby that right to life. So, thank you.
Okay. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative. So I've been sitting here thinking about what it means to say an abortion attempt. That has all the echoes of discarding your child, of not loving and valuing and treasuring that child is going to come and join your family, only to find out that the types of experiences that Dr. Stevens spoke about, that Representative Hemmingson Yeager just described, come along. And my question to you, Representative, is going to, what would you have these families do? Because to me, it is the worst kind of government overreach to go into this family, this tragedy, and say that as people sitting here in St. Paul, we know best. We know how people should handle some of the most tragic experiences of their lives. And I think that I will give grace and say unintentional cruelty of it doesn't make it any less cruel to those families. So, Representative, if you knew that your child only had, and I'm sorry, I can't see you or I'd look at you. If you knew that your child had 30 seconds, a minute, 2 hours, would you really have your child intubated? Would you really cause other people, would you have your sister's child go through that rather than letting them hold it, that child lovingly, and gaze into their eyes and let that baby know that they are treasured as they pass through their brief lifetime? Thank you.
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Ryer, for that question. Again, I don't, a baby with trisomy 13, a baby with any genetic disorder deserves a chance at life. Once they're born, they deserve every protection. And that's what this bill does.
Follow-up? Representative Ryder.
Thank you. So that raises a different question, and I hear you, and that's fine. It is what it is. But the bill, interestingly, seems to only focus on children with a so-called born alive as a result of an abortion. What about all the rest of us? That doesn't seem to be as inclusive as legislation is as it's currently drafted, where it says an infant who is born alive shall be fully recognized as a human person. That is absolutely inclusive. That includes somebody who is born with issues that are difficult to address, medically challenging, if the parent chooses that. I mean, what about the whole universe, and why would you restrict this?
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Ryer. If you would like to offer an amendment to expand these protections, I would be more than happy to look at that. But right now, we're just focusing on babies that survive an abortion.
Okay, thank you. We are Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question at the end of my remarks. But a year or two ago, there was a nationally newsworthy case of a woman named Florida woman named Deb Dorbert, whose baby was diagnosed with Potter syndrome, fairly late pregnancy, and. In Potter syndrome, the child has never develops kidneys, and as a result, the never develops fully developed young lungs. And these children, when carried to term, typically suffocate to death within an hour or a few hours of birth. So in Florida, she was unable to obtain an abortion, was required to carry her child to term. And baby Milo, which is what they named it, died in her arms a few hours after it was born. So the question I have for you is that if Deb Dorbert had been allowed to have an abortion and baby Milo had been delivered during an abortion, would baby Milo have had to been whisked away to the NICU in a futile attempt to prolong its life rather than being allowed to die in its mother's arm as it ultimately was allowed to do?
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Elkins. We don't live in Florida. We live in Minnesota. And yes, this bill would cover any baby that survives an abortion should be provided medically necessary care.
Follow-up, Representative Elkin?
No, nope, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I come at this from two different angles. One, you know, many people are very familiar that I am the daughter of a nurse, 42 years at Hennepin County Medical Center, probably one of the most diverse patient populations in the state. her worst nightmare and the worst case she ever experienced was a child who didn't make it. And while they told her that she had to take it down on a cart to the morgue, my mom said she couldn't do it. She had to hold that baby in her arms because she felt very strongly that if the spirit of that child was around, that she wanted to know that somebody on this earth cared. And then I come at this from the angle of a family. And what we seem to be talking about and what I find really cruel in the comments that we've heard is that we have not thought about the humanity and the dignity of that child and of that family. In my family, the story that Representative Ryer mentioned actually happened. Imagine planning, having experienced 8 miscarriages. You have 2 healthy boys. You get the news that you're pregnant again, but because of all these experiences, you wait. You wait till the last possible moment to tell your family because you just want to be sure before you say anything. So you bring it to your family and there is jubilation. Everyone is celebrating. Everyone is buying gifts for the nursery. They're decorating. They're planning the baby names. They're doing all the things. Their 2 little boys are so excited that they're about to have a new baby brother. Everyone is excited until they go to the doctor and they get the diagnosis that says that that baby is not going to survive till term. And they have a couple of choices. They can let it ride and wait till the baby dies, or they can do just as the doctor Stevens suggested. And they chose to have that baby because they wanted him to know he was loved. They wanted to look in his tiny little eyes. They wanted their priest available with their faith to look over them, to watch over this baby, to baptize him, to let him know that he mattered, to hold them for himself or for them before he passed. What this bill is suggesting is that that's not okay. What this bill is suggesting is cruel. To say that families shouldn't have the right to hold their baby in their arms, to be able to pray over them, to be able to do what's consistent with their values and their faith, that is cruelty, plain and simple. And I don't know how else to say that. And I feel like a lot of the folks who talk about this have not had to walk in those shoes. They have not had to go from planning a nursery to planning a funeral. They have not had to go home and explain to their 2 young children why their baby brother isn't coming home. They haven't had to go to their family and tell them that this baby that everybody's so excited about is never going to happen. To think about standing over a funeral grave for that child and to rob them of what precious moments they might have with their faith, with their family, is just cruel. There is no other way to put it. There is no medical professional that would deny care to an infant. That's not going to happen. You don't become a nurse or a doctor because you don't believe in the value of life. You don't do that because you don't believe that it is your job to value the sanctity of life or to try to preserve life at every possible moment where it is reasonable to do so. It is an insult to the doctors and nurses, and it is an insult to families to insinuate that we as legislators can sit here on our high horse and have better understanding of what these families are going through than they do themselves. Pregnancy is complicated. It is difficult.
But we should not be making those choices for families. Families have the right to do that for themselves. Thank you.
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Again, this is an abortion. This is an elective death of a baby. I feel bad for women that lose children. I have friends that have lost full-term babies. But again, this bill is relating to an elective abortion and ensuring that that baby has every protection necessary for life and health.
Representative Liebing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree this is a cruel bill, but I want to focus on the language of the bill because in my experience, a lot of times when we have bills that touch on abortion, the language matters. You know, we are a legislature here, and the language that we put in law is what governs, not what we think we're doing, not what other people say we're doing, what language we have in front of us. And members, if you vote for this bill, what you are voting for is you are saying that infants who are not a so-called born alive infant are not to be fully recognized as a human person and accorded immediate protection under the law. Look at the bill. The bill is taking a statement that, as Representative Ryer alluded to, a statement that includes every infant born alive being a human person and accorded immediate protection under the law. And then the next sentence is, all reasonable measures consistent with good medical practice, including the compilation of appropriate medical records, shall be taken by the responsible medical personnel to care for the infant who was born alive. So when you vote for this bill, you are saying the only infants that matters for are those who you say are born as the result of an abortion. The rest of them you are discarding by voting for this bill. Now, could this have been drafted differently? I don't know. But that is what the bill does. So if you're voting for it, beware. You are saying to everybody who isn't a so-called born alive infant that they don't matter. You're saying you're taking away what the law now says, that they shall be fully recognized as a human person and accorded immediate protection under the law.
Okay, members, seeing no further discussion, Representative Knutson, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to renew my motion, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Okay, we have a roll call. That's what I was waiting for, so thank you. So I'll turn this over to Ms. Scorby for a roll call. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, a roll call being requested. A roll call is granted. We have to do this officially, folks. So, Ms. Scorby, will you please take the roll?
Chair Backer.
Aye.
Chair Nadeau.
Aye.
Lead Bierman.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative DePell.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Franzen.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
No.
Representative Hewitt.
No.
Representative Knutson.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Mahmoud.
No.
Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Rapinski.
Aye.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Representative Van Binsbergen.
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Aye.
Okay, with the outcome 11 yays and 10 noes, House File 24. Yep. Okay. The motion prevails and is adopted. Thank you, members. Seeing no further business before the committee, our next hearing will be Monday, February 17th, and we are adjourned. Thank you.